Local News, Culture, and NPR.
From the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Farming Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. On today's show, Radio Catskill's Jamie Case heads down to the Wallkill River in New Paltz, New York. Just along the river is the New Paltz Community Garden for Nutrition. It's a 50-year community plot. But this decades-old garden is facing a new challenge, climate change.
So some people's plots just look really nicely watered, and other ones were devastated. It was heartbreaking.
Plus, flowers are in full bloom in Jeffersonville, New York. Lysianthus flower blooms, Casablanca lilies, you name it. We join Kaya Abe-McGee, founder of Momo Global Flowers, a flower farm specializing in Ikebana flower arrangements. All of that in Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report. But first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says his country has no intention of recognizing Russian control over any part of its territory. NPR's Greg Myrie reports on Zelensky's remarks as President Trump and Russian leader Vladimir Putin prepare for a summit next week.
Шановні українці, українки.
President Zelensky made his position clear in a video on social media. He said, quote, Ukrainians will not gift their land to the occupier. He added, we will not reward Russia for what it has perpetrated. President Trump announced he'll hold a summit with Russian leader Vladimir Putin next Friday in Alaska. Trump is seeking an end to the war in Ukraine and says it could involve, quote, some swapping of territory. Ukraine is not part of the summit, and Zelensky says no decisions can be made without his country's full participation. Russian forces control close to 20% of Ukraine's territory in the east and south of the country. Greg Myrie, NPR News, Kyiv.
This morning on social media, President Trump said he will hold a press conference Monday to address safety concerns in the nation's capital. He has threatened to take federal control of the city after a former staffer was badly beaten last week. Immigration arrests at immigration court have increased in recent months, but as NPR's Meg Anderson reports, arrests at criminal courthouses are happening as well.
NPR spoke to defense lawyers and prosecutors in six states where ICE arrests at criminal courthouses have happened. They said the fear of arrest has made immigrants anxious about appearing in court. Some defense lawyers said they worried their clients felt pressure to accept plea deals to avoid going to court. And it's not just defendants. Immigrant victims and witnesses are afraid to show up too, to testify against someone, for instance. Jamie Mosser, the state's attorney in Kane County, Illinois, says that can make it harder to prosecute a case.
The biggest worry I have is that now am I going to have cases where there's a delay in getting to justice because they're being arrested by the ICE agents. Does that then negatively affect a victim?
Officials with ICE did not respond to a request for comment. Meg Anderson, NPR News.
Despite a new round of higher tariffs, the stock markets rallied this week. The NASDAQ ended at a record high, as NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Earlier this year, investors dumped stocks every time President Trump tried to raise tariffs, a warning sign that often prompted the president to back down. But this week, investors seemed to shrug off the higher import taxes, even as the average tariff on imported products jumped to around 18%. Warnings that the new tariffs will lead to higher prices and slower economic growth did little to dampen the market rally. For the week, the Dow gained 1.3%, the S&P 500 index jumped 2.4%, and the NASDAQ soared nearly 3.9%. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
And you're listening to NPR News.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. New York Governor Kathy Hochul continues to condemn Republican plans to realign congressional districts ahead of next year's midterm elections. Speaking on MSNBC Thursday, Hochul said Democrats are poised to realize a generational shift among voters because of Trump's policies, and that has threatened the GOP.
People are going to be losing health care, child care, and talk to a mom or dad anywhere in America. And how are you doing getting ready to buy back the school clothes, backpacks, and sneakers when the sneakers you could have bought for $42 have gone up to $72? That's just in 3 months. That's what tariffs are doing, and it's starting already.
Hochul said the effects of President Trump's tariffs and other policies would prompt voters to support Democrats in the next House elections unless Republicans change the maps.
Democrats will have a generational shift in our favor, but if they're going to break the rules, then I'm not going to follow the meter anymore. I'm sorry to say that. That actually hurts to say that, but I'm not going to go into a fight with my hands tied behind my back. That never works well.
Hochul reiterated her plans to retaliate if Republicans proceed with their redistricting plans by pushing for a constitutional amendment to allow the redrawing of New York's House maps ahead of schedule.
History will judge us how we respond in this moment, because if we allow the Republicans to get away with what they're attempting to do, this legal insurrection of our U.S. Capitol, then we'll have a generation of redistricted, gerrymandered seats that are skewed against Democrats. And when will we ever get the balance of power, at least in Washington?
This is Radio Catskill.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their premium travel card, Venture X. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution, CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you, who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Kimberly Izar. So a few weeks ago, I picked up this very beautiful bouquet of flowers for my partner. It was our anniversary, and the bouquet was just so stunning. It was so colorful. It had these bright orange daylilies. But what made this bouquet so special was that I learned it was arranged in this unique Japanese style of floral arrangements called ikebana. Momo Global Flowers in Jeffersonville, New York is a biodynamic flower farm specializing in ikebana arrangements. And in short, biodynamic farms mean that it's a farm that sees the farm itself as a whole living organism. I recently returned to the farm to chat with Kaya Abe-McGee, who is the founder of Momo Global Flowers, about what it's like to run a 20-acre flower farm in the heart of the Catskills. It's a hot, clear-sky day in late July, and Lysianthus flowers of various colors line an open field. Tucked in a back road in Jeffersonville, New York, Kaya Abe-McGee tells me about what makes Lysianthus flowers so special to her. These large flowers are similar to roses, but they're extremely popular in McGee's home country, Japan.
And when you import from Japan, it's very expensive. So lots of flower farmers recently decided to grow Lysianthus. So these are the types of Lysianthus: purple, light purple, green, yellow, pink is coming, and all slightly different. Some of them have lots of petals and looks like a rose, and it stays quite well in a vase.
McGee's 20-acre farm is neatly lined with deep purple and fuchsia pink flowers at different blooming stages, some nearly fully open to some just starting to reveal its petals. She specializes in a Japanese art form of arranging flowers called ikebana, which uses select blooms to express a feeling or emotion. How did you learn to develop this kind of special kind of arrangement?
Okay. The ikebana itself is 500 years old history, and it started off in Kyoto in Japan. So by that time, I think they started with altar flower, very simple altar flower for both sides, one stem, and then a little by little developed with a tea ceremony. And it was a male practice. Not woman was allowed to do so. So it was a higher class people who just do ikebana and tea ceremony, prince and princess. So in 70s, 80s, become a very big movement in Japan that all the housewife, before they go to get married, they have to, not have to, but it will be nice to know how to do the tea, how to make the tea and do the flower arrangement. So they started off one type of school, but now there's 2,000 or 3,000 different kind of school in Japan. Yes.
That's so many.
It is. So maybe 16 years ago, when I closed my jewelry shop in New Jersey, I always liked flowers and decided to do practice flower arrangement.
McGee says she's been studying the Japanese art of Ikebana for a long time.
I study for probably 16 years, and still I am a master of Ikebana, but it's a lifetime commitment that it never stops. It's like tea ceremony. You just have to keep on practicing like exercise. You just have to be better and better. So I go.
But
to-
running a biodynamic farm, that's still relatively new to McGee. It all started during the COVID pandemic. Like many in 2020, she was anxious to spend more time outdoors, so she headed to Long Island, where a friend of hers needed some help on her farm.
And didn't know anything about biodynamic, and when we have the lunch together, the salad was amazing. It is, what is this biodynamic? So Ira, the owner of the farm, explained me biodynamic is a method that they have a calendar each year, and the moon and the sun, and when to plant, what to plant. You use only compost. If you don't have any animals, you can use for surrounded area. I think it's 100 miles, but closer as better. And I think quarter of your land have to be compost, and keep on making the compost, and no pesticides, nothing. But it's a very slow process. Mm. If you put any material to add on to boost up or kill the bugs, it's easier. But it takes a long time, and I'm still learning each year because I am Ikebana artist. I decided to be a flower farm.
Now, Momo Global Flowers is a hub in the heart of the Catskills for Ikebana flower workshops, music, and outdoor events. She has all kinds of flowers in bloom, from lisianthus to Casablanca lilies. She even has an expansive vegetable garden tucked away.
Some tomatoes are celery for us to eat, sweet peas, pepper, cherry, it's growing at the moment. Marigold, tomatoes.
Oh, I love marigolds.
So marigold and tomatoes, they go together. They are, it's a companion plant.
Not every day brings perfect weather conditions, like the day that I visited Momo Global. McGee says that more rainfall has delayed her operations this past summer.
Because of the rain this year, probably six or seven weeks of rain, and in between there was only one or two clear day, and this area is clay soil, and that's not enough to plant. So I'm delay, but now it's flowering and more to plant because we are delay digging to make the rows like this. But some of them we planted, and it's coming up slowly but surely. Here we are making the bed, raised bed, and we're putting the hay that it's actually my hay that I cultivated last year. And also down there is very wet, so I decided to do willow trees. So there's a couple of different type of willows. And some of them can use for the basket, too, weave the basket.
And like most farmers, McGee still deals with critters and fluffy creatures trying to nibble on their hard work.
And unfortunately, we have a rabbit eating all my dahlias.
No!
So it's not coming up as I wanted. So if you can see, they particular like some of the type kind that maybe it's a better salad for them that some of them stays okay, but some of them, you can see the patches that they've been eating. So they are, I have to replant something else in between.
Oh, wow.
So what can I do? I did the fence. I have a deer fence, but also I have a wire fence underneath chicken wire fence, if you can see here. But somehow the rabbits have a fluffy body, but they can squeeze in somewhere, from somewhere.
So they're sneaking in somehow.
Somehow. So I read that maybe I can plant the onion around this. So there, yes, onion. So I'm going, if I have a chance, I'm going to protect some of the area.
Do the green onions kind of protect the beds and keep the rabbits away?
That's what I read, so I'm going to try it.
We'll try it.
I don't want to spray anything or anything, but if they are hungry, they will eat.
Yeah.
So I'm feeding the rabbits at the moment.
For McGee, always learning is just part of the joy in being a farmer.
Every year it's getting better, but it's slow. Once you make a mistake one season, you cannot fix most of the things on that season. You have to think next season.
Mm.
But I enjoy it. I like to be in the air. The people around here, I met so many nice people, local people. Some people came from New York City. Great community, slow. No hustle, you just have to work every day, sun or shine, on the field.
Mobile Global Farms will host a Shinrin-yoku concert and market on Saturday, September 6th at their farm. That's at 414 Swiss Hill Road in Jeffersonville, New York. It'll feature musicians, artist workshops, and Asian food vendors from Korean to Japanese to Filipino food. In Jeffersonville, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill. I have to say, the smell of some of the flowers in Kaya's garden literally felt like a warm hug. The Casablanca lily, which is this large white lily with these protruding red needles in the middle, the lily had this sweet, delicate smell that was just so beautiful. So thank you so much to Kaya for letting me join her for the afternoon. If you'd like to learn more about the farm in Jeffersonville, you can check out their website. That's momoglobalflowers.com. You will also find more information about their September 6th concert that they're having right here in Sullivan County. You're listening to Farming Country. I'm Kimberly Izar. Up next, you know what time it is. This week's Star Talk Report from Keith Hubbard.
For Farm and Country, I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The Perseid meteor shower will reach its peak Tuesday night. You can expect to see an above-average rate of meteors a couple of days before and after the peak nights, so Monday and Wednesday nights will also be good. On a dark, moonless night, you can expect to see 50 or more meteors an hour. This meteor shower is known as one of the best meteor showers of the year. The waning gibbous moon will be up all night. Try blocking the moon with a building or trees to enhance your viewing. The best time to view the Perseids will be between midnight and dawn. At this time, the shower's radiant will be high in the sky. The Perseids are known to produce more fireballs than any other meteor shower. This is because the Perseids' parent comet is rather large. The Perseid meteors are the debris from comet Swift-Tuttle. The comet is about 16 miles wide and can create large pieces of debris. Comet Swift-Tuttle orbits the Sun every 133 years, and its orbit extends beyond Neptune. The Perseid meteor shower has been recorded for nearly 2,000 years. The earliest account of the Perseids was in 36 AD from a Chinese record that reported, quote, more than 100 meteors flew in the morning. There were numerous references to the Perseids throughout the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th centuries in Chinese, Japanese, and Korean records. Find a clear, dark sky this week and spend an hour watching for the Perseid meteors. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for future Star Talk segments, my email address is startalk@farmandcountry.org. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, This has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
Thanks to Keith for this week's report from the stars. Now, let's head down to a garden just along the Wallkill River in New Paltz. The New Paltz Community Garden for Nutrition has been a staple of local growing for 50 years. But now, gardeners are facing a new challenge, climate change. From flooding to shifting seasons, what once was reliable land is becoming harder to farm. Radio Catskill's Jamie Case brings us to the gardens to hear how members are adapting and what's at stake for this long-standing community space.
It's a 90-degree afternoon in New Paltz, New York. The voles, the toads, and the gardeners are feeling the heat. Just 100 feet from the Wallkill Riverbank and tucked behind the Nyquist Harcourt Sanctuary, the New Paltz Community Gardens for Nutrition, a 50-year-old community garden, has become a hub for everything, from tomatoes to friendship to the occasional flood. I'm joined today by Phil Bishop, the garden's plot coordinator. He's been working the soil here for 3 years, and for two of them, he's helped others find their place in the garden.
Yes, yeah, so we have 160 plots. Most of them are full plots, which are 20 feet by 30 feet, so 600 square feet. And then we have a bunch of half plots, which are 20 by 15, so more like 300 square feet in that 160. And we have over 125 gardeners maintaining those plots. So it's a pretty big community.
Each spring, Phil walks every new gardener through the rows of raised beds and produce, showing them the ropes and the rules of this vibrant green corner of town.
I don't really allocate a plot unless I meet the gardener here in person. So I can show them the garden and give them a tour. They can kind of get a feel for what other gardeners are doing here, just kind of the culture that we have here so that they can get a feel for that.
And the community here is very apparent. Most gardeners stay here year after year, improving their soil and deepening their roots, literally and figuratively.
It's really important for gardening to work with the soil for multiple years. It's like if you just work for it for a few months, it's not as good as if you can amend it every year with some mulch and some compost and build that soil up in your beds. And your plants get better and better every year.
But even a strong community can't stop the hands of Mother Nature. The New Paltz Community Gardens sit directly on a floodplain. It's actually why the land was designated for gardening.
Usually you don't have floods during the growing season. I mean, this is a floodplain, but you know, if it floods in January, it's not a big deal. If it floods in March, yeah, a little bit, but basically that's before things really get started. If it floods in October, late October, you know, things are winding down. But we had floods. We had a flood in the middle of July. It killed a lot of people's tomatoes. It wasn't a deep flood, but it was just deep enough, and part of the garden is lower than other parts. So some people's plots just looked really nicely watered and other ones were devastated. Mm. It was heartbreaking.
Raised beds help if they're staked down, but it's always a gamble.
Yeah, we do encourage most of the gardeners to, for instance, have raised beds. So that if we get flooding of like an inch or so, it protects those crops. If they do have a raised bed, it's generally like a wood stake around soil. And then we encourage them to stake them down because the thing about wood is it floats. So when we get a lot of water, some people's raised beds end up in other plots or in the Nyquist Sanctuary, and that's a bad thing.
This year's May flood came early in the planting season. While most crops were safe, cleanup was still a challenge. And according to the gardeners, it was an unseasonably cold May to begin with.
Weeds love water. So the flooding, it prevented people from kind of coming in and weeding because it was kind of mushy. But it also promoted a lot of weed growth. So taking care of all the weeds kind of delayed being able to get your beds ready for planting. So that kind of delayed everything. But then the cold came, and it's like you didn't really want to plant when it's that cold. So that delayed the plant, So I don't think I planted until like end of May.
I had just laid down a whole bunch of wood chips. So they just got piled over, you know, like the water just picked them up and piled them up along the whole side of my plot. So that, you know, like they're still there.
For gardeners like Nadine and Phil, timing is everything. And unpredictable weather makes planting harder.
And how are your tomatoes doing? Because Phil said...
Well, you know, they're okay. I mean, they're not productive. There's a few starting to ripen. But it's definitely this heat. You know, like everything stops. It doesn't necessarily kill most of the plants. And as long as they've had a lot of water this year, but they just don't do anything. They just sit there. And, you know, when it's this hot. And then, you know, like slowly mine are starting to ripen. But there aren't as many as I would like to have.
You know, the thing about climate change is that you don't know what to expect anymore, right? There is no more normal. So we can, you know, you look in the forecast like 5 days out, it'll say it's going to rain like half an inch and you end up getting like 3 inches of rain. So that's really the issue, is more the unknown aspect of the climate at this point.
That unpredictability is becoming the new normal. And it's not just a hunch. It's climate change showing up right in the garden beds and farms of the Hudson Valley.
I mean, I don't love the heat. I haven't loved the heat. And it seems to me it gets hotter every year.
Yes.
So it gets harder and harder to work as much as I'd like.
As weather patterns shift, this New Paltz garden is feeling the global effects up close. And it's changing how people grow, plan, and connect. But despite the heat, the floods, the setbacks, people keep coming back.
I love coming in and seeing the hummingbirds and the bees. I love seeing the birds when they're nesting, you know, and dealing with their babies. This is a place where they all feel, you know, like safe, and there's food and everything for them. I love seeing that. I love the flowers. They're just so beautiful. And I love getting food.
I'll tell my wife that I'm coming here for an hour, and like 3 hours later, I'll be home. I love to be here. Time just kind of stops. It's just such a special place to be. So even though it's a lot of work, it's not easy to weed and make sure all your plants are watered and set up your beds and things like that. It's a lot of work. But just to be in this space, and like I said, you know, the energy here has been for 50 years. It's built up over time, and I can actually feel better when I'm here than when I'm not here.
The New Paltz Community Gardens for Nutrition aren't just for the people who tend to its soil. It's for the entire New Paltz community.
We are on public lands, so anyone can come down and visit us. Last year, we dedicated a plot to the free food fridge. So everything we grew in that plot, we donated to the fridge. And then last year, at the end of the season, right before the first frost, we cut all the flowers and donated them in front of the library. We had a flower dash, so anybody coming to the library could get free flowers.
Sometimes generosity grows in a floodplain. And even in a time of uncertainty, the New Paltz Gardens for Nutrition remind us of something simple but very powerful, which is that when communities can come together, they grow much stronger. If you want to learn more or join the garden next season, visit gardensfornutrition.org. For Radio Catskill, I'm Jamie Case.
Thanks to Jamie Case for that report. Yeah, I've been thinking actually quite a bit about finding a way to get involved with my local community garden. The ones that I have visited in the past are always relatively small in size, but so mighty in energy and what members accomplish on their plots. And it's just amazing how these plots of land can quickly become so essential for a neighborhood. So maybe that'll encourage you to find your local community garden. And that's our show for this week. This show was produced by the Radio Catskill editorial team and post-production by Ronald Kelson. Thanks for being here with me. Up next, it's Catskill Character on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and PR. Catch you next week.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Morgan Outdoors. Celebrating 20 years as a local source for hiking, snowshoeing, and discovering the great outdoors. on Main Street in Hurleyville, near the rail trail. Morgan-Outdoors.com.
The White House asked Congress to pull back federal funding for public media that had already been approved, and Congress has gone along. We want you to know that NPR and this station remain committed to informing the public, increasing your understanding of the world, and hopefully enriching your life in other ways. But without federal funding, we're relying on your support now more than ever. Please make your gift to this station today. Here's how.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.